a digression today, which into a first of all, are there questions? So I talked about sort of you call it saddle points and game theory and Brouwer fixed point theorem. And so I wanted to actually show you that these same ideas come up in the context of another transportation problem, not the Monge-Kantorovich transportation problem, but another transportation problem, which is used in economics. And I'm gonna refer to the book of Beckmann and Poo. And this transportation problem is not turns out not to be linked to the Monge-Ampère equation, but it turns out to be linked to another nonlinear differential equation, elliptic equation. And so the nonlinear elliptic equation that I have in mind is the so-called P-Laplace equation. So this is divergence of the gradient of u to the p minus two power times the gradient of u. So in case p equals two, this is the ordinary Laplacian. Otherwise, it's some nonlinear elliptic operator. And you can try to solve the analog of Poisson's equation, which would be something like this. So this is the P Laplace equation. And this comes up in the context of the following transportation problem. So given fine density, so in fact, maybe I should let this be, I should give this a different name. On Rn, or maybe let's say on a large ball, I can ask whether it's possible to find a vector field such that divergence W is given by sigma, and and among such vector fields, try to minimize maybe I even call my domain omega, but I have in mind that omega is some smooth, compactly supported subset of Rn. And so you might try to minimize the LQ norm. And the classical case is Q equals 1. And if you wanted, you could, well. You could put some bound, so you can put some boundary conditions like zero flux at the boundary. And if you do this, then when you integrate the divergence over the domain, you get a boundary integral which vanishes. And so in order to be able to find such a vector field, the sign density better have zero total mass. And so this thing turns out to be related to the P-Laplace equation with the boundary condition. But say Dirichlet conditions. And it also turns out to be related to the Monge-Kantorovich problem in the case of the cost equals distance. Beginning in John's first lecture, he put the P-Laplacian on the board as an example of a nonlinear PDE, and I claimed that it was actually related to a transportation problem, and it's this one here. And the so we're not trying to find a mapping anymore, but rather we think of the positive part of sigma as being a collection of sources, and the negative part of sigma as being a collection of sinks. And we're looking for a vector field which sort of gives a continuous flow of transporting the sources to the sinks. So it's a bad picture. But we want conservation of mass out here, so the divergence of the vector field had better be zero. In here, we want the divergence of the vector field to be given by the source. Over here, we want it to be negative, given by the sink. And among such vector fields, we want the smallest LQ norm possible, so we don't want to make it non-zero anywhere that it doesn't have to be non-zero. And in case Q equals 1, basically particles are going to be transported along straight lines. But in case Q is bigger than 1, then it pays, instead of transporting all particles along straight lines, then it pays to spread the vector field out a little bit, because you can lower the LQ norm by spreading. So somehow that's what's going on. And I claim that the connection between this optimization problem here and this partial differential equation is again an example of a saddle point condition in a two-player zero-sum game. So by duality of some kind, i.e. a saddle point condition in a two-player zero-sum game. So, I guess so I should say what the game is. So to motivate the game, let me play with this thing a little bit. So I'm minimizing over all vector fields such that divergence W equals sigma, the integral of W to the qth power 1 over q. And so I can do the same thing that that we did last class, which was I can introduce a Lagrange multiplier, which is conjugate to this constraint here. And so I can augment the thing that I'm trying to minimize by maybe adding integral u divergence w minus u sigma. And if I take a soup, so this is supposed to be an inf, if I take a soup over all such u, then I can hope that will impose that this thing has to vanish, otherwise this term may go to plus infinity. And then if I take my inf over an unconstrained w, I get something like this. And so, okay, so this tells us a guess for the payoff function. It should look something like this. And I'm going to actually integrate by parts. And and put the derivative onto u, because that makes things a little bit nicer for me. So there's still a boundary condition here on w. So let me define this to be my payoff function. I drop a minus sign somewhere when I integrated by parts. And so what's to say? What's to say is that this function is convex in W, linear here. So it's biconvex, i.e. convex in W for every U, and it's linear in U for affine in U for every W. And the natural place to define it is I want W to be an LQ. And I want U to be in, so I want gradient of U to be in the Holder conjugate space to W. So if W is an LQ, then I want gradient u to be an LP where 1 over p plus 1 over q equals 1. And so let me call the space of such functions w1p with a circle on top to denote that this is actually the closure of the continuous functions with compact support. with respect to the LP norm on grad view. And there's this, well, so there's like a, there's a technical point here somewhere, which is that I would like to, I also want to be able to integrate U against this measure sigma, and so I want P to be large enough so that I have a, so that the Sobolev inequality for this space tells me that U is actually a continuous function. So notice, so P greater than N implies that that this actually sits inside the Holder continuous functions with some exponent by Mori's inequality, which is a kind of Sobolev inequality. If I had P less than N, then I would have that a U in here is in some LP star space, and if P is bigger than N, then it's actually a then I actually have a continuous function. It's in some Holder space. And so my favorite reference for these are the book by Evans and Goriopi. But that's fine because P can be bigger than N, Q can be as small as I like, and so I certainly get down to the classical case, which is the one that's really interesting me. In fact, P is strictly convex with respect to W. And so let me give a definition of a weak solution to this equation up here. So I want to say that Laplace equation weakly with Dirichlet boundary conditions. Again, I want to do the same thing. I want to integrate this equation against the test function and put the divergence on the test function. So, if integral gradient of my test function dotted with gradient of u, grad u to the p minus 2, I guess for every, let's say, smooth compactly supported test function. I guess so. In this context, it has the Dirichlet boundary conditions because of this. And so the saddle criterion. Or the saddle characterization of weak solutions says that solves that I have a weak solution if and only if there's some vector field W in the Holder conjugate space, such that W and U naught, I guess I should give this, I should call this U naught. Form a Nash equilibrium in the sense that W0, U0 gives me the minimum payout among all vector fields W and the maximum payoff among all functions U. And I have a vague feeling that I haven't taken into account all the boundary conditions quite correctly, so I'm a little bit nervous about the boundary conditions. for all U and W in this space. So this is a claim, and I should say something about why this is true. So first, let me suppose that. U0 double mu0 forms a saddle. So if this is satisfied, then I want to check that U satisfies this condition here for all test functions. And so in particular, from here, I derive that less than zero, and from the second inequality in the saddle point condition, I derive that this is always bigger than zero, and so I somehow want to interpret these two conditions. And this first guy, when I subtract off these terms with the same W, so W equals W naught, I get left with the two linear terms and with the two different U's, namely U and U naught, and the same W naught. So this side is going to be equal to and this is true for all it's true for all U's in this space, and since U0 is in this space, I can certainly add a smooth function of compact support to U0, and so this is so therefore And by changing the sign on my test function, I can reverse the inequality. And so I get that, in fact, I have a weak solution. So on the other hand, let me, sorry, I have a weak solution to something, but I haven't said what yet. I have a weak solution to the equation, this is W naught. So this inequality here tells me something like divergence of W naught is equal to sigma in a weak sense. In the sense of integrating against test functions, and it doesn't tell me anything at all about it doesn't tell me how U naught relates to this, and so for the relationship of U naught to this, I need to study the other inequality up there, which says that to relate to U naught, I want to use the fact that 0 is less than 1 over Q integral over omega of W to the Q. I get a term like a similar term from the W naught. I get something like this. And then I have these terms. So finally, I have just made some blunder, huh? So something is wrong with this, which is it was supposed to come from here, and which means it's supposed to have U naught in both terms. Goes away. Maybe I want to pull out the minus sign, I'm not sure. Have some expression like this, this has to be true. This is supposed to be true for every W and LQ. So I claim that makes the integrand here positive, non-negative. Almost everywhere. Somehow, if you could find a set of positive measure in X where this integrand was negative for some W, then you can take W to be zero or whatever. You can take W to be W naught outside that set, and then you'd make the integral negative. Now let's choose. set of around negativity. And that yields a contradiction. So somehow I have this pointwise law for almost every x and omega. And that's basically you're supposed to recognize this as the first order Taylor expansion for the function 1 over q to the q's power, which is a strictly convex function. And so this can only be true, again, w is arbitrary, this can only be true if this thing here is actually the derivative or in the subdifferential of this convex function here. So I'm in the subdifferential of a convex function, something to the q's power over q, evaluated at the point w naught of x. And so this subdifferential actually consists of, basically, I take the derivative of this function, so it's absolute w naught of x to the q minus 1, but since I need to carry a direction, let me make it q minus 2 w naught of x. So this gives me a formula relating gradient of u naught to w. And I can rewrite, so what's to remember? What's to remember is that this relationship here is equivalent to p minus 1, q minus 1 equals 1, which says that i.e. x going to x to the p minus 2x inverts y going to y to the q minus 2y. So these two are inverse maps to each other. And so this relationship here which says that gradient u naught of x is equal to w to the q minus 2 w naught of x, almost all x. Can be inverted to read that w naught of x is equal to gradient u naught of x to the p minus 2th power gradient u naught of x. Did I get it right over there? I did. And so now putting this formula for w naught into here. gives me the weak definition, which I just erased. So somehow this one set part of the saddle condition tells me divergence of W naught equals zero. The other half of the saddle condition tells me that W naught is the P minus 1's power of gradient U, and together these two things tell me that I have a weak solution to the P Laplace equation. So that was, I guess, one direction of the implication. Namely, that was the implication that if I have a saddle point, then I have a weak solution. I also want to argue that if I have a weak solution, then I have a saddle point. Conversely, and then I claim that if I use the same formula to define W naught, and then I claim that somehow for this I want to go backwards through my logic. So if I define W naught this way, then I have grad U naught is given by this function of W. And that means that since this is a convex function, I actually have this inequality almost everywhere. And integrating it up, I get a condition that was equivalent to the right-hand equality for all W in LQ. And the other guy well, because I assume that I have a weak solution U naught, it satisfies a condition like this. But with my choice of W naught, that turns into a condition like this. And since this is true for arbitrary test functions, it's true for a dense set of U in W1P. And so, okay, so there's a little gap here which has to do with the density, but well, we saw the way it was defined. So it's true for a dense set of U, and therefore it's true for all U, and that gives me the first saddle point condition. And maybe it's nice to remark at this point that one can see from this argument the strict convexity of this term if Q is bigger than 1. If Q is bigger than 1, then saddle points are unique. So this is a claim again. Lemma, or whatever, which in particular gives you a uniqueness argument for weak solutions to this P Laplace equation. and so let's see. have two saddle points, W0, U0, and W1, U1. On the one hand, I have the payoff of W1, U1 has to dominate the payoff. So if I change the vector field, I can only go up. And if I change the function, I can only go down. So W1, U1 being a saddle point tells me something like this. And on the other hand, since by changing the function at a saddle point, I go down, I also know that W0, U0 must be bigger than W0, U1. And since by changing the vector field at the saddle point, W0, U0, I can only go up. I get a chain of inequalities that look like this. And since the first term is the same as the last term, I must have equality out throughout all become equalities. And what? So strict convexity, since this W0 minimizes for U0 among candidates W1, the strictly convex functional on LQ omega Rn, I have to have W0 agreeing with W almost everywhere. Well, from the equality here. Otherwise, W1 would be a second minimizer. And one of our saddle conditions gave one of our saddle conditions said that gradient U0 actually has to be related to W0 by this formula almost everywhere. And let's see, does that, I didn't think about whether this actually determines U0 up to constants. Yeah, okay. So what I'm asking is, I mean, the question that I didn't think about is this, does that, so I have this space of Holder continuous functions. Is knowing the derivative almost everywhere good enough to, I guess they're absolutely continuous, right? So this is some theorem in single variable real analysis. So Holder continuity. So we've shown that weak solutions to the P. Laplace equation are equivalent to saddle points in this two-player zero-sum game, and we know that the existence of a saddle in the two-player zero-sum game implies the existence of a W-naught, which minimizes the LQ norm among all W-naughts with given divergence. And so one way to solve the original transportation that we started out with, transportation problem of Beckmann and Poo, is to show that in fact, there is a weak solution to the P. Laplace problem, and so of a saddle point, and hence an LQ optimal satisfying divergence W naught equals sigma will now follow whenever the P. Laplace problem admits a unique solution, admits a solution, a weak solution. But this guy can be proved variationally. This. Such existence. The existence of weak solution can be demonstrated using what's called the direct method in the calculus of variations. And I guess applied to the functional. Functional that I would get. Well, I had this inf soup that I just erased. So let me write it. Let me rewrite it again. I started out by saying that if I wanted to minimize the LQ norm. Among divergent sigma vector fields, that I could rewrite this as an nth soup. Of the same LQ norm, but I could take the divergent sigma condition into account by adding a term integral u sigma plus I guess gradient u w. And so this discussion that we had a week ago suggests that whenever you have a biconvex function here, you should be safe to interchange the nth and the soup with some additional compactness. But anyhow, I just want to motivate the function at the moment that I want to apply this to. And so I should equally well be able to actually, I guess I had minus signs here and here, but maybe it doesn't matter. Okay. And if I want to minimize this thing among W's, well, we just saw a second ago what the minimizing W is. It satisfies W naught to the Q minus 2 W equals minus gradient U, which is to say that W equals gradient U to the P minus 2 gradient U. And so if I plug this into the functional, then this inth here becomes all of this stuff to the to some power. That comes with a positive term. This seems to come with a negative sign. And again, it's gradient U to the pth power. And so now I want to use the fact that P minus 1 times Q plus P minus 1, or rather minus P minus 1, is equal to 1. So these 1s cancel out. And this is the pth power here. But this is negative negative 1 over p. And so I just went to some trouble to derive what may be familiar to many of you, which is that I can just try to maximize this functional here, or equivalently minimize and this is actually the usual variational problem that one thinks of the Pila-Klaas equation as being associated to, and if P equals 2, it's the Dirichlet energy with a term, with a source term. So maybe that's a good place to stop. Are there questions? Somehow I like that these things are all connected together by this saddle point condition in these two player zero-sum games. And so one thing I will try to do after the break is argue that this thing actually has a minimum, and by perturbing around that minimum a little bit, I get a weak solution to that equation, and so the original problem actually has a saddle point. Confer about next week. So my suggestion is let's turn off the microphone.
So this is true for all phi. or minus 5. Oh, okay. Yeah. I see. Oh, okay.
Thank you.
This is an equality sign, yeah. I can't really read it myself. It should be an equality sign.
Yeah, like you're real to understand, like where it's at.
Change it, wouldn't you just get an additional term in the P, like a, just an integral of the sigma by itself?
Yes, and sigma has zero map.
Oh, that's right, 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 yeah. Yeah, so I guess we have that as well. Okay.
All right, good. Well, a little pressed, but how are you?
A little pressed.
By me or by other things?
No, by, Jerry, I have the word Jerry.
Yes, no, Jerry, yes. Let me get a glass of water.
Actually, this whole thing, well, that came this way.
It actually was really something like that.
Huh?
I think it's really, like, it all just looks really like a lot of math, a lot of stuff. The idea behind it doesn't seem that complicated.
So what was the initial transportation problem of the plastic in the P?
The field plastic equation, which
what
is...
What the initial transportation problem?
Oh, it was, this was, so, it was like, you could recently change the field plastic equation into a transportation equation. We didn't really go up the book to zero-sum games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you just want to help all this translator. I'm going to the explanation of initial transportation. I think that because the field plastic was related to the, transportation one with the construction in the distance.
Which thoughts the subway should be running in a continuous fashion.
positive that the stocks were people mean right, the negative that the stocks were people need to get out of zero at the other stocks.
Oh yes, so I guess this is a nice point. So I've now sketched perhaps a little bit too fast, or I'm about to sketch. Too much. So yeah, so I'm sort of sketching a existence and uniqueness theory for the P-Laplace equation with measure valued right hand side at zero total integral on the right hand side. In the case where P is bigger than N. And there, I guess, I learned from Dennis Labutin when I was visiting Austin last semester that there are actually some interesting open problems associated with this equation when P is less than N, if you want very general objects on the right-hand side. I mean, if you have smoother objects on the right-hand side, it's not bad, but if you have measures on the right-hand side and P is less than N, then I guess that there are still open problems there, which I... I think that this whole discussion, so P should be bigger than N, so Q should be between, so 1 over P plus 1 over Q is equal to 1, so if P equals N, 1 over Q is equal to 1 minus 1 over N, which is N minus 1 over N, so we've talked about Q between 1 and, N over N minus 1.
On this box,
Yes. It's it's sort of it makes the variational principle make sense that I'm using. I mean, somehow this term in the variational principle and problem makes sense. I'm sorry, what? Which? Right. So the uniqueness certainly doesn't work when Q equals 1. I think the existence is okay. There's an issue. You're right. So I've been writing down a whole pile of formulas which don't make sense as written when p equals infinity and q equals 1. So nevertheless, So before I leave this point, let me say I wanted p bigger than n so that u would be continuous so that I could integrate it against an arbitrary measure. If this thing is better than a measure, for example, if sigma is in some LP space, then I don't care whether u is continuous or not. I just need, if sigma is in LP prime, I just need u to be in LQ prime, where q prime is Holder conjugate. And so I can make a nice theory, but with a more restricted thing on the right-hand side. But if you insist on measures on the right-hand side, then there are still a few open problems when p is bigger than 10. Okay. Yes? Yes. Absolutely, yeah. So Sarah is asking this question about what happens when q equals 1, which is, of course, a very interesting question. And so I should somehow unroll what I tried to say in that case. So negative that thing. So let me say what you can expect. So you can expect that for any finite q and p, you get a solution up grad up which maximizes this thing, which we're going to show exists, and a solution WP, which is given by some formula. You can expect that as P goes to infinity, that you don't want this thing here to be bigger than 1, because when p goes to infinity, that would become integral minus infinity if it stayed bigger than 1 on a set of positive measure. And so that what you expect is that if you can take limits of all of these objects, u of p should converge to some u infinity, maybe weakly, and moreover, you expect gradient of u infinity to be less than 1 on omega. because otherwise this term would be large. And actually a nice thing that happens is that then as long as this is bounded, when p goes to infinity, this term drops out. So you expect this may go to zero. And and so now what's actually true is that the nth and this condition here basically means that u should be a Lipschitz function with Lipschitz constant less than 1. So and what we will see, I guess, next Tuesday when hopefully I'm back from Italy on Monday night. So hopefully I'm here teaching on Tuesday, but if not, John and I will swap lectures next week. This problem here is actually the Kantorovich dual problem, slightly disguised from the form that I wrote it down last class for the cost Cxy equals distance, Euclidean distance between x and y. And actually, Evans and Gangbo actually used this relationship, sort of these approximations here, to this problem in order to construct an optimal mapping between the two mass distributions, positive part of sigma and negative part of sigma, assuming some smoothness and separation of the positive and negative parts for this cost function where you don't have a unique map. And they did this by sort of carefully controlling this limit and showing that, yes, you could extract the u infinity that satisfied this, but moreover, this quantity here also converges to some density A of x, A infinity of x, and grad u infinity of x. And somehow this is sort of one, where A is non-zero, this gradient has magnitude 1, and so this integral here turns out to be integral of A, basically. So, and so they, well, I can talk a bit more about it later, but so the interpretation is that if you do this maximization among all Lipschitz functions with Lipschitz constant 1, you try to maximize the integral of the positive part of sigma against u minus the negative part of sigma against u. And so this makes the function u want to be big where sigma is positive and small where sigma is negative. But it can't, the differences can't be too exaggerated because the slope of the function can never be bigger than 1. And so you find this function which is as big as it can be where sigma is positive, as small as it can be where sigma is negative, and with maximum slope 1. And then where it turns out that where you want to transport the mass is along the lines of maximum slope. And but that still allows you some freedom because you have a bunch of stuff here on some line of maximum slope and it's supposed to go to a bunch of stuff there. And the distance, if you're only caring about the average distance transported, it doesn't matter whether you do this or this. And so you need to sort of have some way of you can make a choice, like I decide I'm never going to rearrange the ordering of particles along lines of maximum decrease, and so then I do this, something like that. But what is the problem? The problem is that if these lines of maximum decrease were all parallel, you would be in great shape, because you could sort of use Fubini's theorem and separate the problem onto these parallel rays and then solve any problem on each ray. Unfortunately, the lines of maximum decrease are not parallel. They might be a little bit wild, and you need to control the wildness. And in a certain sense, Evans and Gang both sidestepped this issue by the information they wanted about how wildly these rays were varying was in this A infinity, which they could extract as the p goes to infinity limit of these coefficients. right. So, but anyhow, I think it's not very bad. So controlling limit may be a little bit delicate, but I think it's not very bad to show this, to prove that this inf is this soup directly, if you want to do that. And we'll certainly, I guess next class we'll do that this one is this one. And so this is another amusing thing, which is that this problem here is on the one hand dual to this problem here, and on the other hand it's dual to this problem here by a very similar kind of duality operation. And so in a certain sense, depending on how you set the thing up, you can get different dual problems. I mean, which two-player zero-sum game you choose, what the spaces are will determine which dual problem you get. Right. Okay, so I'm supposed to say a little bit about this functional here. And so... So my strategy is I would like to argue that this functional of U is maybe weakly lower semi-continuous. In some topology, it's lower semi-continuous on this on this space, and moreover, that if I want to minimize this function, I can restrict my attention to a compact subset of this space, and therefore that this functional attains its minimum. And so the direct method is to use continuity and compactness. So a minimum is attained. And then if you want to relate it to the PDE, you study the use perturbations. Mike's perturbations. With calculus, let's calculus to study Euler-Lagrange equations. I want to make. So first of all, so typically, since you want a compact subset here, you want some kind of weak topology, and then subsets which are bounded in the original norm are compact in the weak topology, and then the norm is always itself weakly lower semi-continuous, so this is good, and hopefully this is a lower semi-continuous term as well, so this is an integral. As long as sigma is in the dual space, then I'm in good shape if I'm in a reflexive Banach space. So, of course, when I want to use continuity and compactness to show a minimum is attained, I'm free to choose whatever topology I like. A helpful topology. And the smaller, or whatever, the coarser I make the topology, the more likely the set is to be compact, but the less likely the function is to be continuous. And the finer I make the topology, the more likely I am to have lower semi-continuity, and the less likely I am to have compactness. And so it's usually a weak or weak star topology. Since then, norm boundedness. Weak star compactness. I also need an argument saying that when I want to minimize this thing, I'm free to look at a norm-bounded subset, and things look pretty good, because if norm is unbounded, this term is going to be large. So, notice. So basically, this comes back to having right. So what I have here is the norm of U in W1P circle, and so hopefully these two things are in dual spaces to each other. By the way, this is the pth power. And so I'm going to do something a little bit schematic. So so sigma is in the dual space to U, and which is actually some kind of space which has a. What do you call it? It's like the negative sublev space. So certainly any total finite total mass Redon measure is in this space. So this is a bounded number, and now so my hope is that this thing here can't become too negative, and indeed. This thing takes the form something like this, where lambda is a positive number, and notice that lambda can't get too large, or else this thing. So. Lambda can't be too large without this thing being large. So this is from p bigger than 1. And so when I want to minimize this functional, I fix some candidate u naught. And consider the set So first of all, since E is a convex functional, this is a convex set. And secondly, this argument here shows that the norm of U can never be too large, so this is a bounded convex set. And and finally, the norm is weakly lower semi-continuous, and sigma being in the dual means this thing is weakly lower semi-continuous because I'm in a reflexive Banach space. So case of a convex set, weak closedness and norm closedness are the same thing. And so a minimizer exists. And basically, because VP is bounded. Oh, well, let's see. Maybe I also need to argue that I might want to. So I guess that I have to. Do I need to worry about the possibility that both of these things become infinite? No, I guess I don't, because of the because they're both finite valued, and because I have weak star lower semi-continuity. So good. And so what remains is to link this minimizer for this problem to this equation up here. And so finally, consider perturbations. right. So if I look at the first term here in EP, I have something like gradient u plus y to the pth power minus gradient u to the pth power. Let me do the formal calculation first. So formally, EP of u plus phi has to be bigger than EP of u, since u naught is a minimizer, and therefore the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of EP u naught plus epsilon, sorry, delta plus delta phi minus EP of u naught over delta should be bigger than 0 if it exists. But this is like the derivative with respect to to delta of this function. So somehow that derivative is the thing that I want to compute. And the function is 1 over p integral gradient u naught plus delta phi of x to the pth power plus minus integral u naught plus delta phi against sigma. So I want to take a derivative with respect to delta of this, and that's I guess the p will come down, and I'll be left with gradient u naught to the p minus 1, p minus 2, gradient u naught dot gradient phi. From the derivative of the stuff inside, setting delta equal to 0. And the derivative of this is integral of phi sigma. And this is exactly what it meant to be a weak solution. Which, so there was some inequality here, but I have this both for sigma, for phi, and for minus phi. And this is what it means to be a weak solution. And so the only bit of analysis is that I want to be sure that it's okay to bring the derivative under the integral. And of course, this term is fine because it's some linear function of delta. I don't even need to bring the derivative under the integral, but in this term I should be a little bit careful and make sure that I can use something like the dominated convergence theorem. And in fact, so I had this argument that used basically the convexity of this function to say that it was okay to bring the derivative under the integral. So M for that was what I was about to write down was the estimate for that. So let's see. Let me write it down. Somehow this was how I wrote the estimate, and I wanted to use the fact that both of these two things are integrable. I mean, so that I have, so this is integrable because U naught is in, the gradient of U naught is an LP, and so it, and it's still an LP if I perturb it by a smooth thing, and so this is integrable for the same reasons. And let's see, so I think this is just convexity. Basically saying that if I have a convex function and I want to compute its derivative at a point, if I take, so this is like my u naught and this is my delta phi of x, and if I take the secant, I get an upper bound, and then if I, or sorry, this is my phi and this is my delta phi, and then in the limit I get this thing. And if I take secants from the other side, I get lower bounds. So this lower bound here is bounded below by, so this is minus delta phi, and this is my, sorry. This is u naught plus phi. This is u naught minus phi. And this is in between is u naught plus delta phi and u naught minus delta phi. And so somehow the slope at this point is bounded above by this slope, which is bounded above by that slope. It's bounded below by this slope, which is bounded below by that slope. And that's the chain of equalities. So now you can, because these things are integrable, I can let delta go to zero, and I will get this out. And that was what I computed here. Are there any questions? Okay, have a happy Thanksgiving.